we've never really done anything like this before in this country.
Federal funds will help relocate villages threatened by climate change. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, December 1st. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, public safety organizations are starting to use a stronger version of a medication to prevent overdoses.
There have been calls where we have had to use more than one of the Narcan.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
The Environmental Protection Agency is one step away from action that would protect the Bristol Bay watershed and crush the dreams of those who want to see a mine developed over the massive pebble deposit in southwest Alaska. EPA Region 10 Administrator Casey Sixkiller announced today that he is recommending that the agency impose restrictions that amount to a veto of the proposed mine. Sixkiller said the action, if approved by EPA headquarters, would support commercial and recreational salmon fishing as well as subsistence harvests that have sustained Alaska Native communities for thousands of years. The announcement is the latest in a long string of setbacks for the Canadian-owned company that wants to mine gold and copper from the Pebble deposit. Pebble Partnership Chief Executive John Shively calls it a massive federal overreach that goes beyond what the Clean Water Act allows. But it's a move toward the lasting protection mine opponents are asking for. United Tribes of Bristol Bay Executive Director Alana Hurley said in an emailed statement that the threat of the mine has hung over the region for 20 years. She urged the Biden administration to act quickly. Sixkiller's move now puts the matter in the hands of Radhika Fox, the Assistant EPA Administrator for Water. Fox could impose the veto, make changes, or reject it entirely. She has 60 days to consider it. A spokesman for the Pebble Partnership said the company was studying the recommendation and had no immediate response. The Interior Department is putting $75 million toward community relocation efforts for three U.S. tribes that are struggling with the consequences of climate change. As KYUK's Emily Schwing reports, two Alaska tribes are among the recipients, but it's not clear whether the funding will be enough to fully move them.
Tony Tommy lives in Newtok. I caught up with him at the local store this fall, a few days after a massive storm battered Alaska's west coast.
All these promises melting, and then this land is going down really quickly.
For years, the Ninglick River has edged closer and closer to Newtok as the frozen ground under the community melts away and sinks. It's a dramatic story that's seen extensive news coverage.
More than two decades ago, the Yupik of Newtok, Alaska, voted to move to a new land. With the earth warming, the permafrost their village sat on was melting.
The landscape is changing, temperatures are changing, and people are having to deal with the impacts from those changes.
For millennia, the water brought food and life, but now it brings destruction.
And still, Tommy and his neighbors remain in Newtok.
Do you think you will relocate?
Hopefully in the future.
That time may have come. In the summer months, the slough that separates Newtok from its garbage dump is too shallow for a boat, and the mud is too thick to traverse, so there's nowhere to dispose of garbage. Ongoing permafrost degradation has rendered the sewage lagoon useless, so there's no official place to dispose of raw sewage. There's also no running water other than at the school, and much of Newtok's housing is unstable and outdated. High on a bluff, 9 miles across and upriver from where Newtok lies, there's a new village site, Mahtarvik. But the process of moving people has taken decades. Only about 150 people live there now. Another 200 remain in Newtok because there's not enough housing or infrastructure to serve them at the new site.
We've never really done anything like this before in this country, particularly for tribes.
Brian Newland is the Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs under the Biden administration. He says the Interior Department hopes to capitalize on some of the progress Newtalk has already made and develop a blueprint for the federal government's future response to climate change.
You know, we want to make sure that we are gaining experience on the federal side of things, working with tribes to do climate relocation work.
The Newtalk community started discussing relocation more than 20 years ago. The process has been complicated by politics and disagreements between local, state, and federal governments. Stanley Tom grew up in Newtalk, and he's been around for much of it. While he appreciates this new infusion of cash, he says it'll take more than $25 million to build out what's needed in Machtarvik.
You know, the airport is done. That's very important. And now we need a clinic, very important. And our tribal community and the PHS, we need to have a water source, water point. Those are very important part of the building and structures in order to keep the community going.
Alongside Newtalk, Napakiak will also receive money. It's a small village along the Kuskokwim River where erosion is threatening most of the village's critical infrastructure. The Quinault Nation in Washington State will also get funding. Newland says the Interior Department weighed a lot of factors in deciding who got funding.
We evaluated a number of communities that have gone through some of our climate funding programs before, and we weighted a number of different factors like readiness, need, existing plans, as well as our ability to glean lessons learned.
Newtalk, Napakiak, and the Quinault Nation will also receive funding from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Eight other tribes across the U.S. will share $40 million to assist in planning for climate change mitigation. In Anchorage, I'm Emily Schwing.
Narcan is a popular brand of naloxone, the overdose-reversing drug that is becoming more and more prevalent as the nation battles an opioid epidemic. However, for about 6 months, the state of Alaska has been distributing a stronger brand of naloxone. It's called Kloxxado, and it's going to public safety organizations across the state. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early explains why.
Alaska state troopers carry naloxone in case they need to revive someone who's overdosed on opioids. For a while, they were using Narcan, a brand name as synonymous to naloxone as Kleenex is to tissues. But Lieutenant Darren Cooper, deputy commander for troopers in the Matanuska Susitna Borough, says one dose wasn't always enough.
There have been calls where we have had to use more than one of the Narcan, and that may be because of the potency of the drug that's on board.
Among the most potent opioids is fentanyl, a synthetic drug that was involved in nearly three quarters of opioid deaths in Alaska last year, either on its own or cut with other drugs. And the rise in fentanyl has prompted the state to start giving out a more powerful overdose-reversing medicine, Kloxxado, says state pharmacist Coleman Cutchins.
Much more potent than medical-grade fentanyl, much more inconsistent. So really, you know, the higher dose of naloxone has really become the standard now.
He says the state switched from Narcan to Kloxxado in May. It's distributed through a state program called Project Hope, which supplies naloxone to many first responders, including troopers like Cooper. Cooper says he appreciates the stronger dose, noting the benefit of only needing to use one nasal spray.
Allowing us to push one, and that being the thing that works, obviously benefits us because we're not having to scramble to make it to get two, or wondering if our second is expired, or, you know, things of that nature.
The higher dose of naloxone is also welcome news for the Wasilla Police Department. Police spokeswoman Amanda Graham says the city saw a large spike in opioid overdoses between May of last year and March of this year. There were 10 reported overdoses in that period, a high number for a city with a fraction of Anchorage's population. She says police used one dose of Narcan to revive a person in just three of those 10 cases. In the rest, they needed more.
In one case, we used four doses of Narcan, but on average, we used two doses.
The Wasilla PD hasn't received Kloxxado yet because they got their latest shipment of Narcan just before the state switched over. Graham says she's looking forward to her department getting Kloxxado. It'll save time and hopefully help people faster.
It's pretty clear that 4 milligram doses is not what's used on average, so saving time while you're on the side of the road helping somebody, or when you're in somebody's home, by not having to open multiple packs of naloxone could definitely be beneficial.
Cutchin says the state doesn't have a clear picture yet of Kloxxado's impact on the state's response to overdoses. He says the state is working to revamp their opioid data collection to be more up-to-date and modern.
We don't have a great system for this. We are improving it. It's probably going to take a little bit more time to figure out, you know, what's the clinical relevance of this change.
As the state works to track the rate of opioid overdoses, several law enforcement agencies are joining the state troopers and Wasilla police in having their officers carry naloxone, including village public safety officers who were trained to use it earlier this year, and the Anchorage Police Department, which says it's rolling out a naloxone policy to start early next year. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a sneak peek at the 2023 Yukon Quest Alaska Sled Dog Race.
Instead of turning and going across the border to Dawson, they're going to go down to Chicken, and then they will be out to Toke for the finish.
Dog mushing, it's coming. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
A 12-year-old girl was shot and killed in Anchorage Tuesday night, and a juvenile boy is in custody, according to police. Police have released few details, saying the investigation is ongoing. In a written statement, police said officers responded to reports of the shooting in the Muldoon neighborhood just before 6:30 p.m. Tuesday. Police say the girl was shot in the upper body and declared dead at the scene. Detectives questioned the suspect overnight. He was taken to the McLaughlin Youth Center with charges forwarded to the State Division of Juvenile Justice. Police say they will not release the name of the girl killed because of her age. The assistant principal at Begich Middle School notified families on Wednesday about a student death. She told them that the student was the victim of tragedy. She said she could not comment about the incident and said a crisis response team would be available for students. A Kodiak man was arrested Tuesday on drug charges after members of the Alaska State Troopers Statewide Drug Enforcement Unit intercepted a package containing methamphetamine, cocaine, and fentanyl. According to a trooper dispatch, 30-year-old Kalani Coyle was charged with multiple counts of misconduct involving a controlled substance. Coyle was known to investigators for drug trafficking on the island, according to troopers. The parcel was allegedly intended for Coyle and contained 912 grams of methamphetamine, 56 grams of cocaine, and 5,550 fentanyl pills. The street value of the drugs was $543,000. It's the latest drug bust in Kodiak. Earlier this fall, law enforcement seized more than 10,000 fentanyl pills in a bust that also turned up heroin, meth, and multiple handguns. The street value of that seizure was also more than $500,000. Coyle is scheduled for a preliminary court appearance in Kodiak later this month. Students were evacuated from Kodiak's North Star Elementary School after a suspicious package was reported outside the school on Wednesday. Local, state, and federal agencies responded, but as KMXT's Brian Venwa reports, the event turned out to be a false alarm.
North Star Elementary students and staff were put on alert Wednesday morning after a suspicious wooden box was placed near the building. Cindy Mika is the Kodiak Island Borough School District Superintendent. Mika says staff notified both Alaska State Troopers as well as the Kodiak Police Department immediately after discovery.
The school was placed into shelter in place away from the suspicious package. Students were evacuated by bus to Bayside Fire Station by mutual decision of law enforcement and the district in an abundance of caution.
According to a statement from Alaska State Troopers, the box turned out to be empty. Troopers contacted the individual who placed the box near the school. The individual said they found it on the side of the road and assumed it belonged to a student or staff member. After the evacuation, parents lined up outside Bayside Fire Station in the cold to pick up their children. One parent, who declined to give their name, shared their experience.
We were told that they were sheltering in place and that there was a suspicious package, and then we got a phone call saying that we needed to come down here to Bayside and pick up our children. So we're here standing in line waiting to get our kid.
The parent says they appreciated the school's caution.
Better safe than sorry. It's kind of scary, but just glad they're safe.
Kodiak Police Chief Tim Putney says the department worked with multiple agencies to ensure safety during the investigation.
Troopers, wildlife troopers, and KPD responded to the school and secured the area. Bayside Fire, Kodiak Fire, and U.S. Coast Guard Fire, and Coast Guard Military Police all helped with the aftermath.
Agents from the Federal Bureau of Investigation also assisted local law enforcement, according to the troopers. Superintendent Mika thanked emergency response staff and the community for their patience during the evacuation.
The professionalism of staff and our law enforcement and fire department partners allowed this effort to go as smoothly and timely as possible. We thank parents, families, and caregivers for their patience and understanding.
The district will also review their actions with emergency response partners in an effort to improve future procedures. Students will return to North Star tomorrow, where counselors will be available. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
The Anchorage School District is considering increasing class sizes in order to close its massive budget gap. At a work session Monday, district administrators outlined potential savings that could come with increasing the pupil-to-teacher ratio, which measures the number of students per staff member in a school. Currently, it ranges from 21 to 1 in kindergarten to 30 to 1 in middle and high schools. Increasing it by 1 across all grades would save the district $7 million and require 60 fewer teachers than the district needs to operate now. Increasing it by 5 would save the district $32 million and require 274 fewer teachers. Andy Ratliff is the district's budget director.
It wouldn't mean necessarily 274 pink slips if you went that route, but it would definitely mean more kids in the classroom and fewer teachers overall.
Many teaching positions are already vacant, and a few hundred teachers usually retire every year. But even if the district can avoid layoffs, Teachers Union President Corey Aist is still concerned. He says large class sizes negatively impact both teachers and students.
In the higher grades, it's just that much harder to run science labs, to support students in more challenging math classes and things like that. Writing assignments. I'm not grading 25 students' essays. Now I have 35, 40 students. All those things take an impact on our educators, on time, and on student outcomes.
Aist says class sizes are already bigger than teachers would like. In a recent survey conducted by the union, more than half of middle school teachers said they had 31 to 35 students in their classes. The board will continue discussing potential budget cuts at a work session on Saturday, December 10th. Administrators must submit a balanced budget to the school board in February and to the Anchorage Assembly in March.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, offering guests hot breakfast, Wi-Fi, and the Red Lantern Steak and Spirits Restaurant. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com. Do you need health insurance? United Way Healthcare Navigators are here to help you understand your new Affordable Care Act coverage options and opportunity for savings. You can call 211 or text GetCoveredAK to 898-211 to connect to a healthcare navigator. Enrollment is open now through January 15th. Call 211 today. This message sponsored by United Way of Anchorage.
The Aleutian Archipelago stretches 1,200 rugged miles across the North Pacific Ocean and Bering Sea, and like much of rural Alaska, fast and reliable internet in those far-flung island communities is either prohibitively expensive or unavailable altogether. So, it was a big deal when GCI began constructing an underwater fiber-optic broadband cable connecting them to the mainland. But on Monday, in the Aleutian's biggest city, mere weeks away from the launch date, the cable in Unalaska was damaged. KUCB's Theo Greenlee has more.
Telecommunications company GCI has spent 2.5 years planning an underwater cable, promising to run high-speed broadband down the Aleutian chain. And things were looking good. The 800-mile fiber optic project had just passed a huge milestone earlier this month when the company actually ran their first test and successfully brought connectivity to Unalaska. But on Monday, just weeks away from the official launch, something damaged the cable.
We believe the likely cause is the anchor from a passing vessel.
That's GCI spokesperson Heather Handyside.
Once our crews identified the damage, we immediately requested the deployment of our fiber splicing ship, and that's a fiber ship that is on standby in the lower 48, ready to respond to any incident like this where we require subsea fiber repairs. That ship is on its way. It's estimated to arrive in the next week and will immediately begin repairs on the damaged fiber.
Handyside says GCI does not expect the damaged cable to delay the company's plans to turn on service by the end of the year. But you gotta wonder. Millions of pounds of fiber optic cable, 800 miles, 2.5 years in the making, a feat of modern engineering, just weeks away from completion, foisted by the anchor of a passing ship in Dutch Harbor, the nation's most productive fishing port. What's to say that won't happen again? Here's Handyside.
Damage to subsea fiber or fiber breaks is a relatively rare incident, but it does happen. And that's why GCI pays and contracts out with a specialty fiber ship to be available 24/7, 365 days a year to respond to incidents just like this. I've been working for GCI for about 6 years, and I cannot recall, I maybe recall one time that the ship was called out to do a subsea fiber repair, and that was not due to an anchor, it was due to an undersea landslide. So if that gives you some perspective on how frequent these fiber incidents occur, they are very rare.
GCI has over 6,000 miles of subsea fiber between Alaska and the lower 48. And has operated those thousands of miles of cable for decades with almost no incidents. And Handyside says the company is working to educate the public, mariners, and anyone who might work around the cable sites.
Through outreach and education efforts, both at the local, state, national, and international level, we belong to national and international associations who make it their business to share this kind of information, to prevent these kind of incidents, and we've really strong track record of success. So I feel confident in the future as we continue to talk about this new fiber and as we continue to increase awareness about it, just like all of the other fibers that we operate subsea to the lower 48.
GCI says the fiber project is still on track to deliver broadband internet to Unalaska sometime in December. Reporting in Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
A member of a national committee that looked at the health effects of PFAS shared information about the project during a webinar yesterday put on by the Alaska Collaborative on Health and the Environment. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Dr. Laura Anderko co-authored a recent National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine Special Committee PFAS report. Dr. Anderko said the committee reviewed scientific literature and data on human health effects linked to PFAS exposure and categorized them based on how strong the connection is, starting with those where there's sufficient evidence not based on chance or bias. They include decreased antibody response and several others.
Dyslipidemia or high cholesterol, adults and children both, decreased infant and fetal growth, and an increased risk of kidney cancer in adults.
The second category group PFAS health effects for which there is limited or suggestive evidence. That list includes liver enzyme alterations and increased risks for thyroid disease and dysfunction, ulcerative colitis, testicular cancer, and pregnancy-induced hypertension. Anderko said the review also yielded a new connection.
An increased risk of breast cancer in adults, which had not been documented up to this point
Dr. Anderko said the committee used all the PFAS health effect information to develop clinical recommendations, including blood testing for the chemicals.
People who are highly exposed should be encouraged to get a blood test.
Anderko said the committee noted that there are a limited number of laboratories in the country which screen blood samples for PFAS, and also emphasized their relatively high cost and test access inequities. PFAS is widely used in consumer and industrial products, and PFAS-containing firefighting foams have contaminated groundwater at numerous locations in Alaska. Anderko said the EPA released a more stringent interim drinking water health advisory level for some PFAS chemicals this past summer.
It's gone from 70 parts per trillion all the way to 0.004. That's incredibly huge difference.
Anderko noted that there is federal money available to help communities with PFAS-contaminated water. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
A small but competitive field is taking shape for the 2023 Yukon Quest Alaska Sled Dog Race. Defending champion Brent Sass headlines a list of 13 mushers who have signed so far for the 550-mile main event from Fairbanks to Tok. The roster also includes 2017 champ Matt Hall and fellow Quest veterans Michelle Phillips, Cody Strath, and DK Nachtgeboren. Top Iditarod racer Wade Mars is also registered to run the 550. Yukon Quest Alaska Executive Director Kathy Diamond says any additional mushers are likely to sign up by December 15th.
The deadline to sign up for the 550 and be at the $1,000 entry fee, and then it goes to $1,500 after that.
Diamond says the 550-mile trail will run over the traditional Quest route from Fairbanks to Two Rivers, Mile 101, Central, Circle, and Eagle.
And then from Eagle, they're going to drop down over American Summit just like they usually do. But instead of turning and going across the border to Dawson, they're going to go down to Chicken, and then they will be out to Tok for the finish.
Diamond says mushers will be required to rest at least 4 hours at either Mile 101 or Central, 4 hours at Eagle and 6 hours at Chicken. The Quest 550 and two shorter races, a 300-miler and an 80-mile fun run, are all scheduled to start Saturday, February 4th in Fairbanks. And finally tonight, a correction to a story that aired Wednesday. We reported that there were four votes separating Tom McKay and Denny Wells, candidates for House District 15. In fact, after results were certified, the candidates are separated by 7 votes. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Emily Schwing, Wesley Early, and Chris Clint in Anchorage, Kirsten Dobrath and Brian Venois in Kodiak, Theo Greenlee in Unalaska, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
And by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production, and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.